Some time ago, an Anglican vicar friend of mine told me of his frustrations at how the Church of England is sometimes perceived by the general public. So, for example, if it says something nice about the royal family, it's praised as a valued part of the British establishment. If, however, it produces a punchy document about poverty in the inner cities, it comes under attack, and its bishops are told not to meddle in politics. It also bothered him that many of his own people have no concept of the church as a means of growing in faith. For them, he says, going to church seems to be the decent thing to do from time to time and has a lot to do with saving the Queen. There's something similar going on in our first reading today from Amos the prophet. Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, thought of religion only in civil terms. It exists to promote loyalty to the state. His job was to prophesy things that would keep the people sweet, keep them in line. Amos, on the other hand, an outsider, not a priest, saw religion as loyalty to God's law, and his job was to denounce the religious leaders for their injustices and for getting rich and fat on the backs of the poor people that they were supposed to be looking after. In a similar way, the apostles, simple fishermen with no status, no material backup, and relying entirely on providence, are sent out to preach repentance. Regardless of not being made welcome or of people refusing to listen to them, as with Amos, they're told their message must get through. Throughout history, humble and unlikely people have been chosen to be prophets and messengers to let people know that things are not as they should be. In our own time, look how little Greta Thunberg, in spite of often being ridiculed in the media, has mobilised a whole generation of eco-warriors to help preserve God's beautiful world for future generations. Prophets will always be needed to remind people of the need for justice and, of course, to echo the call of the gospel to care for the most poor and marginalised. During COVID, it's been wonderful to see a huge upsurge in more care and consideration for other people, people really putting themselves out to see how they could help, which maybe we were losing sight of a little bit before COVID. And that same sense of justice has led to new thinking about the purpose of the economy, whose focus in recent years, as you know, has grown to mean profits before people, you know, cutting down rainforests in order to make more money for the restaurateurs, that sort of thing. It's also great to see that through pressure from ordinary people who swamped their MPs' inboxes last week, the bill to introduce abortion up to birth has been withdrawn. So maybe we're beginning to turn the corner a bit. While we're on COVID, there are of course downsides, and one of the downsides is that mental health has become a huge issue. Because it is such an issue, lots of stuff is being written about it at the moment. By nature, we are creatures of hope. We're always hoping for things to get better, to be in good health, that our plans will succeed, that there'll be sunshine tomorrow, that the government will deliver. But that optimism has been dented by the failure of many of our hopes to be realised. For some, as you know, it's led to a lack of motivation to carry on after a setback, such as missing exams or losing a job. So how do we restore hope? When the human being fails, where do you go? Who or what do you put your hope in? It's easy, of course, to see why people despair, but actually the enemy of hope, the destroyer of optimism, is not despair, but false hope and unrealistic expectations. True hope is about reality. Hope flourishes in difficult times. People need to know that it's possible to be happy in a world of limitation, to live with a certain messiness, and to adapt to ever-changing circumstances, because not everything depends on me, or the government, or human institutions. So our job, if you like Amos, is to surprise people with the gift that they didn't know they needed, to help them to realise that they are missing something. We need to help them to rediscover God. Hope is about finding God at the centre of life. Well, I'll leave the last word to, as I say, there's been a lot written about mental health at the moment, and this was Charles Hampton, a pastoral psychologist from Oxford, and he says this. He said, depression settles on a sufferer, without their quite knowing how or why. And he reckons that in the understandable desire to work out what's going wrong in order to put it right, we have too much input on ourselves and we lose patience, as we might lose patience with a tiresomely unresponsive relative. This, he says, is where religion comes in. We live in a society in which the human being is being placed firmly at the centre and God is on the margins. There is a lack of a sense of the transcendent, of being aware that there is something greater than me who is in control, that we are not self-sufficient, that we must accept our limitations. And he says, choosing to attend Mass introduces something much other than ourselves into our inner world, where its mediation comes as a welcome relief. Relating to other Mass-goers also strips away the isolation that self-absorption creates. It undoubtedly works, he says. So there you have it. Spread the word. Coming to Mass is good for your mental health.